Of course, Phil Leonis is a Crystal Palace supporter, so perhaps as far as life is concerned, it could be a case of visiting the Championship this season. Who knows? Roy Hodgson's in charge. But we're not here to talk about sport. Are we Gabriella Peralta in Gibraltar?
No, we're not. We're here to talk about, I think I'm talking about the Literary Festival.
You will be talking about the Literary Festival a little bit, because we did a little trailer heads to that last week. It's finished now, of course, in Gibraltar, but I think it was a great time over the last few days. But before that, to pave the way, before we formally say, with the time in Los Angeles being coming up to 2.5 minutes past midnight, so California has now reached Thanksgiving Day, it's time for you to provide that first little trailer before we get our reciprocation from Phil Leonis of the weather forecast for Lincoln from Gibraltar.
Okay, so the weather is highs of 9 degrees centigrade, lows of 3 degrees centigrade, early cloud and rain were clear with a few sunny spells through the day.
That was superb. And now, the weather forecast for Lincoln, England, from Los Angeles, United States of America.
Well, I want to combine Los Angeles and Lincoln, a little comparison and contrast that worries me, quite honestly, because it is November. It is the middle of autumn. It is Thanksgiving. We think of leaves having changed colors, having fallen to the ground. We think of bonfires. And yet, it is 21 degrees centigrade after midnight here in Los Angeles. I think the big fireball in the sky that we call the sun is up there in Lincoln, and yet it's only 6 degrees centigrade. What has gone on? Has the whole world gone crazy, Alex?
That's what happens when you've had a budget in the British Isles, you see. Automatically, the temperature drops by an average of about 15 degrees. It's a standard way.
It's nature's way of saying something.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like stamp duty, not the rest. But we're not here to talk politics. Lord knows we could, but we won't we won't go down that
line.
How long
have you got?
Please. Oh, we've got so much
well,
to
at least let me throw my 2 pence worth in. I guess then, therefore, our temperatures are rising here in Los Angeles because we are the home of the resistance.
There you go. Talking about resistance, I was fortunate enough to touch base with the wonderful actress Maureen Lipman last week, actually, when we did a feature on the Gibraltarian Literary Festival. We hadn't forgotten you, Gabriella, and as you might have gathered, we gave you solid name checks and the Gibraltar Chronicle in the interview. She seemed to be quite impressed. So how was it? Did you go and see Nicholas Parsons? Did you check out Jenny Murray? Did you simply sort of say, no, I'm waiting for the Magic Festival?
I went to Magic Festival as well last night, but I did see Maureen Lipman and Nicholas Parsons during just a minute.
Without deviation, hesitation, or repetition. You see, Phil might not get that reference. Shaley might. Deviation, repetition, or hesitation?
No, lost on me.
Just a minute. Very famous, extremely long-running. Longer, actually, than the Midweek Drive. And
about 50 years, I think.
Oh, yeah. And the Chilpack Hollywood team put together, actually, just a minute. Yes. Nicholas Parsons, a non-Ogidarian now. Non-Ogidarian, 90 in his 90s, 91. Still doing fantastic stuff. Still, in the words of Maureen Lipman, as straight as a board. She's referring to his posture. And in terms of the delivery, a simple game show in which you are given 1 minute, hence the title, just a minute, 60 seconds, to talk about a topic that's randomly selected without any deviation, hesitation, or repetition. Otherwise, people would stop you there and then. Phil,
it's harder than you think.
Yeah,
well, exactly. Particularly when the pressure's on and you've got citizens of Gibraltar staring at you, you know, saying, you know, what's going to happen? I mean, Phil, you might like to introduce this to the Los Angeles Breakfast Club as a possible, you know, post-Thanksgiving, pre-Christmas event.
Team building.
Yeah.
It's actually a great it's a great improv exercise, and it could be wonderfully hilarious.
Even magical.
Yeah, it was very funny.
That's why it's lasted.
I must say, though, it's a little bit dirty pool for you to thrust me into an expectation of talking about this game show that I know nothing about for a minute after hitting me with this idea of both a literary festival and a magic festival in Gibraltar. I know so little about Gibraltar, except now in my mind, it's the home of all festivals.
We do have the music festival as well, the chess festival.
What?
We have a lot of festivals.
Chess
and then
festival?
We have the spring festival. Yeah, we... people come over and play chess.
That sounds amazing.
We have like the spring festival calendar, which brings in everything's a festival.
Just a plethora of festivals.
Take that.
Oh my goodness. I'm making some up. I'm making some up and I'm putting them on my curriculum vitae. I was an official competitor in the Gibraltar Cross Country Ballroom Dance Festival. I'm putting that on there.
That sounds amazing. Yeah, cross country?
We have the world, so we have the music festival, and then we have the World Music Festival, where songs from across the world are played.
So wait, is the first music festival just music from Gibraltar?
No, it's we get like acts from everywhere, like. We get big ones.
So wait a minute. The first music festival is music from around the world, but the World Music Festival, well, that's music from around the world.
Yes.
Genius.
But they have like a theme. I think last year's theme was Chindia, a mixture of China and India.
Nice.
Original.
Yeah. Chindia.
Yeah. Keep it fresh in Gibraltar.
It may only be 3 miles of rock in the Mediterranean, but at the end of the day, take that, yeah. Los Angeles and Australia combined.
Population of 30,000.
Alex, there's the advertising slogan for next year's Gibraltar World Music Festival. It's 3 miles of rock.
Oh, I like that, actually.
Yeah, and that's what you call co-creation at its best on Thanksgiving Day in the States. Genius. Next critical question, of course, as Shaylee's keen to know, what's the situation with Frodo?
He's just had his breakfast right now, so he's kind of on the floor making a lot of noises of
semi-conscious.
Yay. Yeah, he's semi-conscious, but he's also, nice. I think, kind of like licking his lips, thinking, oh, that was a good meal.
Well, as long as he's just licking his lips, I have heard that canines are prone to lick other parts of their anatomy, which actually we don't want to go into at this time of the morning, but it makes them very happy, so I'm told. Anyway, moving on. Phil, clearly Black Friday is the next biggie, and we've got not just one, not just two major features on Black Friday that's coming through today. There is a suggestion that it's just something we've imported lock, stock and barrel from the States without realising the significance of Black Friday, and the fact that in terms of the top 10 purchasers in Britain for Black Friday are personal technology, toys for the kids, coats, beauty purchases, boots, designer clothes, box sets and computer games, handbags, soft furnishings and white goods. Are you going a bomb on Black Friday in California? Is it a case of, I've got to get online, I've got to buy this stuff now, I've got to get out there and actually sort of get this material?
No, you know, in Los Angeles, it's odd. I've told you this before. The city becomes almost a ghost town here. So it really is very low pressure. You don't really realize what the rest of the country is how they are feverishly preparing for their Christmas shopping, because it just Los Angeles is not a big Thanksgiving city. I think because there are so many transplants here, there aren't big families here, so people go elsewhere, and it's easy to forget about all of that. It's as I said, quite blissful. It's quite quiet and peaceful here. That said, I have experienced it in other parts of the country. In fact, I think I told you one time, I was coming back from Vancouver, British Columbia, into Washington State. We had to fly out of Seattle, Dean Haglund and myself, and we got off to a late start, and we thought, oh, dear God, we are going to be in the worst traffic ever. We're going to miss our flight, because the traffic from Canada to get down into the States to enjoy the Black Friday deals was enormous. However, what apparently customs does, or at least did back then under a different administration, admittedly, but what they did at the border crossing, they stopped no one. They just basically shouted out, are you coming in to spend money in our country? Come on in.
Yay.
So nice. It was actually the best traffic imaginable. But that was quite an eye-opener.
Sensational.
So if you want to get in, you just got to go on Black Friday.
Purchase things.
Yeah.
Consume.
Yeah.
Consumer terrorism.
That was very Marxist,
it's a whole thing. I mean, we could have Altus there, we could have Marx, we could have ideological representations of state apparatuses and their subsequent control. I defy any other populist radio station to say those words at 11 minutes past 8 o'clock on a British morning here in Europe. Let's move on. Phil, would you like to put those last two questions to Gabriella Peralta?
As long as the first of those two questions is, what constitutes a breakfast for Frodo? I constantly hear Frodo has just had breakfast, but I don't know what constitutes a breakfast for Frodo.
It's just his dog food, and then I give him a treat as for finishing off his dog food. Because if not, he'll take Frodo's
okay.
treat.
It's just his dog food.
So he gets a snack after the meal.
If not, Frodo will mill about for 20 minutes plus, or half the day he'll mill about with his food. So if I give it something to him after, now he knows.
It's like it's motivation.
It within 20 minutes so that he can get his treat.
Well, I found that disappointing, especially on American Thanksgiving, which is so about the food, the variety and abundance of food. So I'm going to pretend that treat you give him is a pumpkin pie with whipped cream. That's what I'm going to pretend.
Nice. That's good. And somewhere in some reality, that will be manifested. Just as the final two questions will be, and I know you're going to deliver them. Go, Phil.
Did you have a good time? Did you have a good time with us this morning, this evening, this afternoon?
Yeah, I did. Thank you.
And can we look forward to speaking with your good self again next week?
Yes, next week.
And for Frodo, and indeed Dean Haglund, who's lost his little doggy recently, and somebody's sad. Here's David Cossetty, who we've also lost recently. It's the puppy song.
Dreams are nothing more than wishes, and a wish is just a dream. Myself so very lucky just to have some company, share a cup of tea with me. I take my puppy everywhere, la da 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 da, I wouldn't care. And we would stay away from crowds, signs that said no dogs allowed. I know
bit of personal anecdotal autobiographical evidence that actually got me through losing my own little pet dog Blackie when he actually passed away back in the sort of cross sheepdog.
Sheepdogs are really clever.
Exactly, sort of 15 I was at the time. Oh, what's that? I'm younger anyway. So it goes. Anyway, enough of that, Phil. I know you can actually jot that down as another useful piece of autobiographical left cheek information you may or may not choose to use in future references. Phil Leonis, would you like to formally welcome our next telephonic guest, who, allowing for the fact that Netflix has started the premiere for the next edition of their lavish royal drama The Crown Series 2, might have something to say about platinum wedding anniversaries and more. Phil Leonis, it's over to you to take the introductory reins and introduce our next guest, please.
Well, I don't know who the next guest is.
Oh, Phil. You've already talked ahead to this. I'll give you a clue. He's a film critic and royal correspondent.
Oh, he's going to talk about The Crown.
He might.
This is excellent. This is the peerless historian, film critic, raconteur, man about town, Richard Fitzwilliams.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Phil.
I'm touched by these various sobriquets that you have so eloquently strewn in my path.
I was going to laugh if he said the wrong person.
It's all good. Anyway, did you get to the premiere of The Crown Series 2, Richard, before we move on?
I'm afraid that was pretty zealously guarded. I did not attempt to get to it because I was not asked to it. And it is a problem seeing a premiere here or a preview of the Netflix series. I haven't seen it. I have seen, however, that there are reviews, which I try not to read until I see it. But what was absolutely fascinating was to refresh myself in the week of the Queen and Duke's platinum anniversary of their wedding. It's absolutely extraordinary, of course. I mean, dinner for 150, they celebrated at Windsor Castle. What was Prince Philip doing that afternoon? Carriage driving, of course. 96, what can one say? I can only say that I saw the 1947 wedding wonderfully depicted in The Crown again, and I mean, it's amazing, not only a colourful early scene, the Crown memorably begins with George the VI coughing up blood, and that is a precursor of what's to come, but a glorious piece of grandstanding by Winston Churchill, who arrives late with his wife, asks the young boy outside Westminster Abbey, "Are we the last?" And realizing that they are, this Churchill sweep in, and the whole congregation stands up whilst singing the hymn. And then when seated, Philip gazes at, is looked at by Churchill from his pew. "His sisters are Nazis," says Churchill. "I'm married to Nazis." Then even louder as he's so outraged, "Prominent Nazis," and Harriet Walters, his wife, shuts him up. Absolutely priceless stuff. And I mean, the glory of The Crown Series 1, well, I hope reflected in Series 2, and indeed, touched you mentioned it, because tonight I'm giving a talk of how the British monarchy has been portrayed on screen at Westminster Library in Leicester Square. A fascinating subject. And as for the platinum wedding anniversary, I mean, a lot of attention attracted in the press here. Not so much on radio and television, because they were mainly the documentary shots. But then, I mean, what is there more to say? It is one of the most amazing royal romances ever. It is a partnership. And what could go on, where opposites have combined so superbly, despite adverse circumstances, certainly so far as Philip was concerned, to have one of the not only longest but also most successful relationships in history between the king, the queen, and her consort. And it really is amazing. I mean, since they met in 1939, when Philip was a cadet at Dartmouth Naval College, she's had eyes for no one else. And I mean, when the superlatives have been exhausted, and yet they're still there to be discussed as a couple. How it's almost a conspiracy the way they manage to work rooms, the way they carry out engagements. He's retired now, of course, since August, but he's been appearing with her. He did look very, very tired, I have to say, at Remembrance Sunday. And I mean, it really was fascinating doing some television to commemorate this, because really, as I say, what more can you say about the stability of continuity and what they brought to the monarchy?
So let's just put it from the Los Angelino perspective. Did the platinum anniversary on Monday go down very well in Los Angeles? Was it a case of, yay, 70 years? We could have had this celebration as well if only we hadn't made a different decision back in the day.
Well, look, we would trade what we have right now, I think, for just about anything. But I sadly, no. There was very little reference or coverage, certainly in the mainstream media, to this. we have our hands full with so many matters of crises of state right now. But what I love and what led me into reading about this occasion was that I follow Richard Fitzwilliams on Instagram. And Richard, you've been doing a wonderful job of late curating your Instagram. I urge everyone to follow you. There's so many beautiful photos, but also that's what led me to realize, wow, this important anniversary is taking place. I want to learn more about it.
Oh, I'm delighted because I love connecting on Instagram, and I see a lot of your posts, and we press the button of like, and
it's like a social media love-in. Let's move on, because I was quite surprised, actually, Shaylee, to find that not only, of course, is The Crown a Netflix series, but also Mudbound, a Netflix original. Phil has already gone on record as saying he's got issues with respect to Netflix and the Star Trek Discovery series and CBS All Access.
I've got issues with respect to Netflix and their distribution policy and the effect that's going to have on cinema, but we probably haven't got time, I fear.
So let's go into Mudbound. Two Mississippi families, one black, one white, confronting the brutal realities of prejudice, farming and friendship in a divided World War II era.
Evocative, powerful, and I thought very realistic. It's directed by Dee Reese, and I think that this
violence is part and parcel of future life. I learned how to stitch up a bleeding wound, load and fire a shotgun.
I'm just going to hold it briefly there. We're having just one or two little mini challenges as I sort of work our way through that, because I just realised I've actually put something through a channel which shouldn't have been going through a channel there. So it's a technical glitch from that sort of point of view. I think we're okay now. No, it's all right. We can go back to Mudbound with yourself.
A story of grinding poverty and of two veterans, one black, one white, in the deep south after returning from the war. But also, what I loved about this film is that you've got two stories. You've got the story of, in 1939, Laura, played by Carey Mulligan, a girl from Tennessee, marries somewhat suitable wife, brother's boss, Henry McCallum, and played by Jason Clarke. They have children, and parallel to this is Hap Jackson, story. He's played by Rob Morgan. A story of a tenant farmer in the Mississippi Delta whose ancestors were slaves. He wants to join his own land. His wife is Florence, played by Mary J. Blige. So watch for that name when Oscars come up. And we have the parallel, Hap's oldest son, Ronsel, an excellent performance by Jason Mitchell, and Henry's younger brother, Jamie, by Garrett Hedlund, also excellent. They enlist, what happens to them during the war and what happens to them subsequently when they return. A black man who's not going to put up easily and deeply resents the racism in Mississippi. The other, an alcoholic who falls for Laura. Now, this is a movie. It's a long film, but it does pack a punch, and what's more, it's extremely realistic. And whereas, as in so many of these movies, when you see someone who looks particularly evil, you can guess that they might be a member of the Ku Klux Klan, it isn't always subtle. The facts are that there are scenes in this that will haunt you, especially what happens when the members of the Klan, most particularly Jamie and Henry's monster father, Pappy, who's a vicious racist, discovers precisely what Ronsel has been doing since he and Jamie become friends whilst he's been in Europe, where he's been welcomed as a liberator. But it's got a collection of superb performances. Carey Mulligan's always good, and I really liked her Laura. The kinship between the poor whites and also African-Americans with so little is extremely noticeable, as is the intense hostility and racism in that the period post-war. As you can imagine, a scene with the Ku Klux Klan involving, shall we say, a particularly horrifying form of torture is what sweeps into the mind, but this film has an epic sweep to it, whereas in fact it deals with the stories of various individuals, all of whom I thought was so well acted. That was one of the reasons that I liked it, and I think that I think it, are we going to have a movie such as Get Out have a surprise win at the Oscars? Well, I don't think so, because Hollywood doesn't like horror films, and because I have a feeling that because Moonlight won last time, they're starting to fag Get Out as part of a...
Okay, let's hold it, because we've got the awards season, and of course we've got the second in the annual Leonis versus Fitzwilliams predictions,
yes,
for the Oscars coming through, so that's to come.
The films like Phantom Thread have been seen, yes.
Yeah, it's always teasing ahead. Phil, Mudbound, does it float your boat, no, so to speak?
I am very familiar with the Delta and with its history, and becoming more so all the time. It's one of the places in this country that I'm most drawn to. And the verisimilitude that Richard spoke to is palpable. It is powerful. I have a lot of problems with the film. You may have been able to discern from Richard's description, there are a lot of characters in this. And he started out by saying that it was the story of two veterans. The one of the problems is those two veterans aren't introduced really in the first act of the film. It is not clear in this film whose movie it is, whose story it is. We tend to jump, and sometimes we jump away from the things that are the most compelling. I also think narratively, structurally, there is a very bad choice made where in the very first scene of the movie, they show you the ending. And therefore, as harrowing as it is, you also are let off the hook a lot during some of the most harrowing scenes because you already know who lives and who doesn't.
Shaylee, where would you go?
See, I was sold, but now that Phil's described it in that way, it makes it less interesting.
It was like Richard was leading ahead there, and suddenly, whoosh, from out of nowhere.
Because I was going to say, anything that shines a light on that sort of era and that period of time in history is really good. But it sounds
the
narrative isn't amazing.
This is the thing about it. You know, it's on Netflix. It's a Netflix release. And this is the thing. Why not watch it? You can see it on Netflix. You don't have to pay cinema prices to go and see it. In fact, it's
or even
only
leave
being
your house.
Released.
Yeah.
It's only being released in America to enough theaters to qualify for awards. Mm. They
and
don't expect people
to do.
To
and
go.
Here is a very, very big problem, which we probably can't explore here. But I do.
No, because let's face it, film stars don't die in Liverpool. Moving on, Richard. Time
You've
is time.
Moved on a rate of knots. This is a very powerful film, and I had to ask myself what I knew of Gloria Graham, and the answer was precious little. I mean, I hadn't seen, frankly, I hadn't seen any of her films. The name I knew, and she won an Academy Award, and also she was a star of top Hollywood movies, some noir type films in the 40s and the 50s, including one with Humphrey Bogart, making her name in Hollywood, and also finding that the roles were drying up, she attempted the stage. Now, there's talk about structure and structural problems. This film, which begins very movingly and rather dramatically when she falls ill, has structural problems of its own. I would just mention that I agree that some of Mudbound's structure was flawed, although I was gripped by the story. Here I have to confess very sadly that this film was very, very close to home for me, and thus I felt for it in ways that not necessarily everyone would. But when you see Annette Bening give a superlative performance, I felt, as Gloria Graham, I thought, I have to say, that she made her look perhaps a little older than she might have been, but it was, and it is, an extraordinary story based on the memoir of Peter Turner. He's played by Jamie Bell. He's a struggling actor, and in his hostel, in a hotel, he meets, and passionate romance ensues when he meets Gloria Graham. He's got working class roots, not subtly shown, by the way, and I have to mention this, I hate to mention it in a brief review, but I was very worried. He has his father's played by Kenneth Cranham and his mother by the inimitable Julie Walters. Her wig worried me throughout this entire film, and
if you're worried about the hairpiece, it's always a challenge.
This shouldn't happen. But having said that, this romance takes him to Harrods in Los Angeles, a scene that's very memorable when there is a dinner with Gloria's mother, Jeanne, played by Vanessa Redgrave, and her sister Joy, who drips poison, played by Frances Barber. Not one of my favourite theatrical actors, but she can be good. This only hints at the darker side of Gloria's rather predatory nature. We haven't time, obviously, to go into what happened in real
exactly.
life.
And let's face it, Richard, how you could actually neglect Gloria Grahame's fantastic performance in It's a Wonderful Life, probably the best Christmas movie ever. I'm just shocked. Anyway, Phil, carry on.
Well, no, I haven't. I have to just, if I may mention, Annette Bening's performance.
You
I
have.
I really, really feel that, and I know this, alas, tragically from personal experience, the way she plays a role of someone who has terminal cancer, and the way that this is handled into the story, and the way the story shows what really happened when they were in, well, firstly Los Angeles, but there's also New York, and what happens to their relationship and how it's subsequently, it means that when she falls ill in Lancaster and he takes her to be cared for by his family, there's a very, very added poignancy in the scenes of flashback. So much of this movie is told in flashback at various times. I found it worked very, very well because, unfortunately, there is, as you gathered, a very, very strong link. I felt desperately for some of these scenes. This is not a movie I enjoyed, but I thought it was brilliant acting by Bening. I do hope it's rewarded. Jamie Bell is very good.
Well, let's face it, after being the incredible the thing in the Fantastic Four Josh Trank movie, his career could only go one way. Phil, briefly, in terms of Gloria Grahame, Annette Bening, do film stars die in Liverpool? Film stars don't die in Liverpool. What's your thought?
Now, this film does not come out here until the end of December. It just was put on my radar. I have been a big Gloria Grahame fan, and I became a Gloria Grahame fan because of her performance in the Humphrey Bogart vehicle in A Lonely Place. It's one of Bogart's best performances. It is a great movie, and because I saw that when I was young, I then went and sought out other Gloria Grahame works, and what immediately became apparent to me was how this very sensitive soul was just, all her insecurities were preyed upon by Hollywood, and it really kind of chewed her up and spit her out, the Hollywood machinery, from what I've learned about her story. And so I think it's really an interesting time for this movie to come out, because suddenly we're aware with every news cycle, when we hear more and more about the monstrous behavior that is so prevalent in Hollywood, it's amazing that there are any actresses that did not fall prey to having their weaknesses preyed upon.
And don't get me started
the
on,
way that Gloria Grahame did.
Don't get me started. Get me started on Frances Farmer. Excellent movie by Jessica Lange in the lead role.
Exactly.
Shaylee?
Yeah, no, definitely. Jamie Bell always surprises me when he's not in Fantastic Four, of course.
don't mention that movie.
I grew up in the Billy Elliot era, so he was a real favourite for me because that was like one of my favourite films. So anything that he's in now really surprises me because they don't obviously typecast him, which is really, really good. But in terms of Gloria Grahame, I'm afraid I've got no background whatsoever.
Well, now you do, you see.
Yeah.
You've got that sorted through.
No, but it looks and sounds really, really interesting.
It's thumbs up. Phil?
My particular interest was in the amazing Annette Bening performance. And as I say, completely the opposite experience to Phil. There are certain periods in Hollywood that appeal to certain individuals and that one can study and so on, and that particular period in the history
you were doing other things at the time, Richard. You were sorting out South Africa, let's face
well,
it.
Well, there's always that.
Lord knows
I have
what
to say, director Paul McGugan knows what he's doing here, and it tugs at the heartstrings. It really deeply moving. I'd be fascinated to hear what Phil thinks of it when he does see it, because I was very tearful, but...
Oh, Richard, please,
let
it go.
But as I said, there were reasons for that.
Exactly. Phil, would you like to put those last two questions to Richard Fitzwilliams, please, before we find out what Ian Lennox is up to with the release on various electronic platform of his latest novel?
Richard, so delightful to speak with you. I would give almost anything to be able to attend one of your presentations on the depictions of the royal family in the media, in movies. That sounds fascinating. Did you enjoy your telephonic link with us here this morning?
I enjoyed it enormously. It was a really super pleasure to have the surprise, because I know how late it is in the States.
Well, early, really, Richard. It's now coming up to 20 to 1 in the morning as far as Los Angeles
exactly
is concerned.
Exactly so. So, I mean, I hope you will be joining us frequently on other occasions, and I most certainly have absolutely loved it. It's a very interesting point about some of what you were saying about the structure of Mudbound, too. I would recommend the movie overall, which is a very good point.
I mean, the construction workers have arrived to celebrate Thanksgiving, so that's nice.
The structure of movies is important, too, so I hope they proceed, but quietly.
I take it you'll be back next week then, Richard.
Phil,
are you still okay to stick with us?
I wouldn't mind going to bed.
Oh.
I'd quite like sleep now, please.
Well, it is Thanksgiving Day, so if you wish to go, let us know now, or we'll do something. We might not be with you.
I do need to get... I have to get up very early and do some cooking for 30 people.
Well, so. Phil, it's been a delight. Take care. You can obviously tune in through... Through the whole
what's
system.
What's the occasion?
It's nice one, Richard. Nice one. Yeah. So he did the keeping the empire flying. Anyway, I challenge Phil now to actually mention the platinum anniversary of Her Majesty the Queen and Prince Philip on the next edition of the Chill Pack Hollywood Hour. You know, I just think it should work there. Just see what it connects. You know.
How about that documentary footage, Phil? You know, it is extraordinary. The whole thing just defies belief in the history of royal families. There's been one marriage comparable, and that's lesser men members of the Japanese royal family. Nothing to compare with this. And also,
Richard, hold back on the eulogies.
Tyrant Robert Mugabe, the Queen is now the oldest head of state in the world.
Well, who would have thought that Mugabe being deposed would have actually led to, you know, another win-win situation? Phil, I take it you've had a reasonably interesting telephonic link.
I have enjoyed this immensely, and please let Mr. Lennox know that on the next Chill Pack Hollywood Hour, I will be singing from the top of the tallest mountain the praises of a book called The Brothers.
Yay.
Susan, beware of the devil. Let him spoil your heart. Susan, beware of the devil. Don't let him put us apart. Did I hear you say we got apart? Or did you say let's go for a walk? Did I hear you say you got someone new? Or did you say you like the color of my shoe? I don't know what's going on. You're not the girl I used to know. You're turning my world upside down. Branding me with Susan, beware of the devil. Don't let him put us apart. Did you say you're leaving town? Or did you say you're sticking around? Did I hear you say you're serious? Or did you say it's all a bluff? Why do you wanna change our dreams? All the things we planned and schemed. Do you really wanna go? Or is it just an overnight?
I don't know. It may be, it may not be. We'll get the full version of Dandy Livingston's Suzanne, Beware of the Devil in the not-too-distant future. Meanwhile, Shaylee, do you know what I actually did in the electronic world on Monday?
What?
I actually shelled out a couple of English pounds electronically.
Nice.
For Bare Knuckle from my Amazon Kindle reader, written by a certain Ian Lennox.
No way. I've heard it's the best book yet.
Exactly.
Of this century.
I think Phil Lynn is talking about that with respect to The Brothers, which he's going to be eulogising about on Chill Pack Hollywood, we thought we'd work that whole process through. Congratulations, Ian. It has now been released. It's out there. People can actually buy it. It's, as I say, it's a couple of pounds worth of job. Well, actually, it's £1.99. It's less than that.
Nice.
It's £1.99. So 199 pennies for just sheer wonderment. Will you be downloading it in time to what are we doing for next week, perhaps, Shirley?
I can do.
Yeah.
I mean, I've just started a new John Grisham book, but I can put him aside for the time
being. Oh, he has to do that.
Do it now, do it now.
So it's out there. We're celebrating the fact that it is out there. Relief, Ian, or is it a case of, no, I'm already on to the next one, The Tale of Two Cats Living with a Former TV Producer Somewhere in Tyneside?
I don't know. It's a peculiar feeling I have every time you finish a book, actually. It's a bit like postnatal depression without the stomach pain. Mm.
Aww.
And we just don't...
I shouldn't say that before breakfast now. what I've always tried to do, even when I was working in television with doing documentaries and things, was to just accept that once you finish it, that was it. It's gone. And you'd had to move on to something else. Didn't dwell on it. Mm. And try to occupy yourself with a new project.
Yeah, and leave it to folk in the media to constantly regurgitate and repackage and revisit and have anniversaries and talk about that whole thing. It's all right, we've got your corner, Ian. We've got your corner. Unlike, of course, the Newcastle United defence, who clearly decided to just capitulate.
No.
I mean, I thought for a moment, I thought, great, City could be moving 11 points clear at one stage, but no. You had to go and concede 4 goals.
They're a strange team, Man United. I don't know if you saw that, this is the whole game, but they're, first of all, they're an extremely large team.
Mm.
I think they've got about 5 or 6 6-footers, so we were above 6-footers, and they win everything in the penalty areas. And I think Manchester City are undoubtedly the best team in the country, but they will have trouble against Manchester United.
We might even have challenges against Huddersfield. Coming up,
I must admit, I thought your centre-half was very lucky to stay on the pitch.
Well, yes, but...
In the second minute.
It's all down
anyway,
to...
Anyway, it all evens out over the season,
exactly,
I know.
Exactly, yes, the old Leicester City routine. Coming up, Dr. Hugh Stacey, who's the Vet and Director of Clinical Services at Vets for Pets, will be talking about a recent survey which suggests that pet adoption is at an all-time high, and pet owners should really be spending more time researching their next pet. Rehoming centres have actually seen a significant increase in the number of fashionable breeds being brought in. Battersea has received 29 French bulldogs so far this year, compared to 8 in 2014. Rehoming of pets is becoming a phenomenon. Thank the Lord that Ollie and Obo do not need to be rehomed, because they're part of the whole sort of sequence. But we'll be talking about this in a few moments, which is why we're going to have to cut you short slightly, Ian. But there is the proviso that next week we'll hopefully have a wonderful, glorious time where we can connect with you over all wonderful things. So last two questions for Ian Lennox, please. Shaylee McKenzie.
Have you enjoyed your brief?
Yes.
Good. And nice. Will you be back next week so we can discuss your book?
Oh, yes, I certainly will do that. Yeah.
Excellent.
That's what we wanted to hear.
Thank you very much.
Black man rain, are we not happy at all?
China Crisis and Black Man Ray, and this little factor which we just raised a few moments ago, vis-a-vis pet ownership and pet adoption and rehoming of dogs and so on. Research from Vets for Pets has revealed that more than half of pet-owning Brits should spend more time researching their next pet. In fact, they would spend more time researching their next pet. Shaylee, you were saying from your own perspective, yeah, people don't realise just how much is involved in looking after a canine friend.
Yeah, so when I was younger, we had a black lab called Gus, and really enjoyed the idea of owning a dog. But unfortunately, we were all either at college or my parents both worked full time, and we actually didn't realise how much like taking care of a dog took. Oh. And in the end, we had to give them to the police.
So again, rehome now to address this issue and to provide us with some hopefully very sensible, helpful hints to actually work with this system. The vet and director of clinical services at Vets for Pets is joining us, Dr. Hugh Stacey. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Very well.
Excellent. You've heard Stacey's tale there. Sorry, Stacey. Shaylee's tale. Oh, it's too early in the day sometimes. About the way in which pets require that, and the fact that pets do require time, they require money, they require a suitable living environment, the diet is actually there. Is that something which, again, is a common theme, which despite regular features such as this, people still kind of neglect to say, oh, it's a puppy, we're going to take it and look after it?
Exactly that. I mean, for a lot of people, getting a pet is a really emotional decision. It's something you do because you really love, you know, love a species. You love the idea of having something. And a lot of people go sort of head over heels into that without really stopping to think about, as you were saying there, Shaylee, about some of the, you know, the practical considerations of having a pet.
41% actually apparently didn't consider where they lived or what kind of job they had before choosing their pet.
Yeah. That's scary.
So, again, Hugh, from your own perspective, is it a case of, look, a bit like we're always told, just think about the ramifications of this. Yes, pets can be wonderful companions for us. I know from my own point of view that it just wouldn't be fair on any mammalian life form with the kind of lifestyle I'm driving it around and all the rest of its species, taking on board that responsibility. But the key thing is, it is a responsibility.
It really is. And, you know, pets really prove the old adage, you can act in haste and repent at leisure. You know, lots of pets, they're with us, you know, for many years, and your lifestyle can change. And that's why we've developed a choosing a pet tool to really help people to think through some of these considerations, thinking through how much time they have, the money, the financial considerations of having a pet. Many people really underestimate how much it's going to cost to keep a pet for its lifetime, and things like the space, space in your house, space outside, you know, the environment outside. And think as well, all of those things can change if you're in rented accommodation. If your job might change, if your family circumstances might change, just have a think about, you know, what your life looks like going forward. Yeah.
I was also quite saddened by the fact that the power of the media, and in particular great Game of Thrones, can influence people. I mean, people thinking that the likes of huskies, obviously featured in Game of Thrones, will make lovely pets. That's not the case.
Mm. No, that's it. And we really, you know, we've seen, as vets, we've seen breeds come in and out of fashion. You know, in the past it's been Dalmatians when Disney were featuring that. In previous decades you can see breeds like Dobermans rising and falling with popularity. At the moment, things like Huskies and Akitas, which can be quite handful. And then a lot of the flat face breeds as well. So you're seeing lots and lots of French Bulldogs, Pugs. Those sort of breeds are very popular at the moment. So there is a trend with fashions, but, you know, this can bring with it, you know, some of these dogs can have real health problems that people don't really appreciate when they see them about and think, like, you know, they look very cute, you know, very endearing. I'd love to have one of those. It's more than people bargain for sometimes.
And Shaylee, as we said earlier, unless you're a dog whisperer, it's difficult to find out sometimes how the pet's actually feeling. Obviously, we get certain signifiers from their reaction in other areas, but challenging times. Hugh, you talked about something which has been introduced by Vets for Pets in terms of addressing this issue and maybe actually being worked through before people think about what to actually choose online and indeed reducing the number of pets being put up for adoption.
That's right. So Vets in general, really, you know, we have a wealth of information. We've seen lots of people with their pets. We know we've got lots of good experience, lots of knowledge about what works and what doesn't. But very few people think to come and talk to the vet about, you know, when they're thinking to choose a pet. So we've developed an online tool to help people just to work through some of these ideas, think about their lifestyle, how much spare quiet time they have, how complex a pet is to keep, and also the stability of their own lifestyle. And that's on our website. That's on vetsforpets.com/choosing-a-pet.
In fact, we're looking at the homepage on that in particular. Shaylee, any thoughts from yourself?
No, it sounds really interesting. And yeah, definitely. I didn't know Vets for Pets was a thing.
There we are. And that's the reason. Exactly. That's great. You see, that helps all the marketing routine superbly, doesn't it, Hugh? You know, Vets for Pets is indeed a thing, putting your pet first. It's fantastic.
That's it.
In terms of finding out further information, clearly we mentioned the Vets for Pets website, and just a reminder, it's VETS, the number four,
that's it,
followed by pets, or one word. So it's not just canines, obviously kitty cats are there and so on, and even sort of presumably lizards and tortoises as well from that perspective.
That's it. The choosing a pet tool, it's loaded with all the options. There's different sizes of dogs, cats, rabbits and guineas, and then some other things as well, like fish and reptiles are all in there as suggestions. And if you sort of run through it, make some suggestions, and then it gives you some more information about each of those species and says, gives you some starting ideas and then suggests where you can go to learn more about them. Really useful for helping people get their thoughts in order if they're thinking about getting a pet.
Also, bearing in mind the stress that this can also be in terms of relationships, the line that one of the most common reasons for rehoming a pet is pregnancy, indeed having children.
Yep.
The best way to introduce a pet to a newborn baby is quite an interesting one.
Yeah, so, you know, for this, you know, it's obviously a big, big lifestyle change when you do start a family. And doing it carefully and under supervision, you know, I'd suggest seeing how the pet's dealing with it. If you think they might be nervous, there's some great resources out there. You can get download recordings of child noises, and actually play those. If you've got a dog that you think might be worried or cats, you can actually play these in the run-up to it, to bringing a baby home, just to get them starting to get used to the idea of it. But careful introductions and always under supervision, always supervise interactions between pets and children until, you know, children are of a responsible age, because, you know, misunderstandings do happen, accidents do happen. It's just something to be aware of.
As we knew, it was going to be sage and wealthy advice from that point of view, and important advice as well as wealthy, richest in all sorts of ways. What sort of pet do you have yourself, Hugh? I think we might have asked you this before, but I mean, do you have any particular favourites, or is it a case of no? As the Director of Clinical Services, I have to be completely neutral.
No, vets are pretty good at collecting animals along the way. So we've currently got a pair of border collies, a very old cat, a couple of guineas, and we have a squirrel as well.
Oh, squirrel.
Genius.
Exactly. Hugh, it's been fantastic sharing some thoughts with your good self today about a very, very important topic, and something which, again, needs thinking about in terms of rehoming pets and choosing the right pet for your good self. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephone link? Has it been okay for you, sir?
Been very good.
In which case, can we hopefully connect again in the not-too-distant future and keep us appraised of the excellent work Vets for Pets, that thing that puts your pet first? Sorry, I didn't mean. Will you be kind enough to return?
I'd love to. Be
Yay!
Good.
I have a very good friend.
May be able to do. Go head over heels. Thank you, ABBA. All right, moving on. In the second part of the programme, after the news from the Sky News Centre, we have Richard Christofoli, a retail expert, talking about the United Kingdom response to Black Friday, which, of course, Shaylee, was given the name Black Friday because?
It was given the name because retailers would be in the red, and on this particular
beforehand,
day,
their books would go in the black.
In the black. Genius. So they'd be in the money.
We might also squeeze in Kevin Maguire, who's got some of his fantastic music that he's going to play for us. Naomi Willis, co-founder of skintdad.co.uk, will be with us. We'll squeeze in one or two John Wenham events diaries as well. Plus Richard Arnold, television critic, discussing World TV Day. Best situation comedy, not Fawlty Towers, Only Fools and Horses.
Nice.
Exactly. And that's all to come. We might even squeeze in a little touch of slow rage if we don't get too excited. Which lane are we in? Are we in the fast lane? Do we want to have, as in certain supermarkets, a lane for fast walkers? It's a thought. Coming up, the news from the Sky News Centre, and then Siren Radio continues, as mentioned, with the best in quality entertainment, because frankly, you deserve no less. Thank you.
FM. Online. Online. Mobile. Mobile.